Coming up in November, of course, a big midterm election with a lot of people already getting energized and mobilized, working to educate voters, register voters, and get out the vote. As we get closer and closer to the November election, that work is only going to heat up. But a lot of activity this week nationwide because of a number of primaries in states across the country, plus that special election that everyone was following very closely in a heavily Republican district in Ohio that is leaning Republican as the votes came in, but still too close to call as they're still in the process of counting those absentee and provisional ballots, which is, generally speaking, good news for Democrats all around as we head into the midterm election cycle. Tom Jensen is the director of public policy polling based out of Raleigh. Publicpolicypolling.com is their website. Been following all of those races very closely for a sense of what it means in terms of trends and expectations and forecasting as we head into the general election of 2018. He joins us now on the phone. Tom, thanks for being with us today.
Hey, Aaron, good to be with you.
So let's start by talking about the results. What were the really significant races that happened on Tuesday? Obviously, the Ohio special election was the one that got most of the press, but not all of it. What were the ones that you were watching the most closely, and what can we glean from the results, if anything?
Well, I think the big takeaway from Tuesday was hard election data showing that the huge Democratic wave that we've been talking about this November really is coming. I think the results on Tuesday across the country pretty much reinforce what we've been finding in the polling all year. So certainly the headline race, as you referred to, was that special election in Ohio's 12th congressional district. There hasn't been a Democrat to represent that district in recent memory, and it's a district that Donald Trump won by 11 points. And as you noted, the race looks like it's going to be decided by about half a point. And I know Democrats are disappointed that they didn't quite get over the finish line in that race, but there's about 80 Republican-held congressional districts up for re-election in November that are more Democratic than that district in Ohio that voted on Tuesday night and basically went to a tie. So Democrats would only have to win a third of the 80 or so districts that are more Democratic than the ones they fought to a tie on Tuesday night. So I think that looks very positive for Democratic hopes of taking the House. We had found in our polling that the Democrat Danny O'Connor was leading among definite voters, but that Republicans had a huge edge among probable voters, people who weren't quite as sure that they were going to win. And they deployed Donald Trump there the weekend before the election to sort of get those hesitant voters out to vote. And it looks from the small Republican majority like that, small Republican victory, like they succeeded. But you're not going to be able to deploy Donald Trump out at the last second to every district in the country where Republicans are having these kinds of problems in November. So that was a big thing in Ohio. But I actually think the even more interesting election results on Tuesday night were in Washington State. They have a system there where you vote for all of the candidates on one primary ballot. So there's not a Democratic primary or Republican primary. Just everybody who runs is on one ballot together, and the top two go to the November election. And this voting system has actually been pretty predictive over the years of what happens in August. It's a pretty good indicator of what will happen in November as well. So there were three congressional districts there on Tuesday night that had very notable results. One is Washington's 8th district, which has been represented by Dave Reichert for the last 14 years. And it's one of those areas that has voted Democratic for president, but it's been frustrating for Democrats because it's continued sending Republicans to Congress, even though it votes Democratic for president. Democrats have about a 5-point lead in that district based on the primary results. So that's looking like a pretty good pickup opportunity. But what was really surprising in Washington State on Tuesday night was that Kathy McMorris Rogers, who's been in House leadership for the Republicans and is in a district that voted for Donald Trump by 14 points, only has a 1-point lead over her Democratic opponent in this first round of voting. So very surprisingly competitive in that race. And then Washington's 3rd congressional district, which is represented by Republican Jamie Herrera Butler, and which voted for Trump by 7 points, the vote came out 50-50 on Tuesday night between Democrats and Republicans. And that was a race that wasn't even really on people's radar screen for being competitive. So a bunch of results Tuesday night that just sort of reinforced with actual election results that we're headed for a huge Democratic year.
So speaking of that kind of huge Democratic year that we're expecting, are there particular parts of the country or particular states where we're seeing that more strongly than others? I know we've talked about the difference between like rural districts and suburban and urban districts, but are there sort of geographic regions where that's stronger?
Well, one thing that was interesting in Washington state is out of those 3 congressional districts that are moving strongly to the Democrats, only one of them is actually in the Seattle metropolitan area. So what was kind of interesting with that batch was that some of them weren't necessarily in huge urban centers. But on the whole, it is the suburbs that are moving in Democrats' direction. That close race in Ohio that we saw on Tuesday night, the Democrat did exceedingly well in the areas closer to Columbus and then didn't do as well in the more rural parts of the district. Another positive data point for Democrats on Tuesday night came from Michigan, where about 54% of the two-party vote in the primary for governor was cast by Democrats, when usually Republicans outvote Democrats in these kinds of elections. And there were 2 congressional districts in Michigan that are Republican held and haven't really been on the map in recent cycles, where there was actually more Democratic vote cast on Tuesday night than there was Republican vote. One of those, I think, maybe is your home congressional district, Michigan 8, which sort of extends from the Lansing area over to the northern Detroit suburbs. That's a seat represented by Republican Mike Bishop, and Democrats outvoted Republicans there on Tuesday night. And then also in the Detroit suburbs, Michigan Congressional District 11, which is an open seat where Republican Dave Trott has retired, Democrats outvoted Republicans there. And those 2 districts are places that 2012, 2014, 2016 were never on the list of places that were going to be competitive for Democrats. But as the suburbs have trended increasingly Democratic, we saw that Democratic interest and intensity was higher than Republicans in those districts.
Yeah, Lansing is one of those cities, isn't it, where it's a kind of a left-leaning city, but it just so happens to be broken up into a bunch of different congressional districts that all lean right.
Yeah, exactly.
Speaking with Tom Jensen, publicpolicypolling.com is the website, or find them on Twitter at PPPpolls. So the other kind of media narrative that came out of the Tuesday results was the split within the Democratic Party between kind of more left-wing kind of social democratic candidates and more kind of moderate mainstream DNC kind of candidates, which in this case, the centrists seemed to do better on Tuesday than the more social democratic wing did. Previous elections, it had kind of different results. So anything that we can glean from that in terms of where the party should go?
Well, it's sort of an interesting situation with what's happened in Democratic primaries this year. Almost across the board, the establishment Democratic candidates have won Democratic primaries. But then the one example that went to the opposite, and when Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez beat Joseph Crowley in New York City, has like gotten 10 times as much attention as all the Democratic establishment victories combined. But the reality is what happened Tuesday night is reflective of what's happened pretty much across the board. There's been this interesting sort of dynamic that's played out in a lot of Democratic primaries this year that is sort of Emily's List versus Bernie Sanders, where you have Emily's List supporting female candidates and then Bernie Sanders is supporting somebody on the other side. Emily's List is pretty consistently beating Bernie Sanders. We saw in the Michigan governor primary that former state senator Gretchen Whitmer, who was strongly supported by Emily's List, beat a young physician named Abdul El Said by about 20 points. He was backed by Bernie Sanders. There was a congressional primary in Kansas on Tuesday night where Democrats nominated a Native American lesbian. So yes, safe to say she would be the first Native American lesbian in Congress. who Emily's List was behind over a candidate that Bernie Sanders had supported. So I think one thing that Tuesday night definitely showed, and this fits in with Ocasio-Cortez's win too, is just that when Democrats have the opportunity, for the most part, they're nominating female candidates. That's something that's just really been a constant in Democratic primaries across the country this year.
So if you're giving advice to the Democratic Party in terms of should we kind of lean more towards the kind of the social democratic fired up Bernie Sanders base or kind of lean more towards the center and try to pick up the swing voters in the middle, what would your advice be? Or is there a way to kind of reconcile the two?
Well, I think what's interesting about these quote-unquote establishment candidates who keep on winning primaries is that they are very liberal. They're not moderate. Gretchen Whitmer is not a moderate. Like, a lot of people are trying to sort of play this out as a moderate versus progressive thing, but it's really sort of just a different flavor of progressive, I think, that's winning these primaries. The people who are winning these primaries are quite liberal. So I think what Democrats need, and I think certainly Michigan Democrats nominated somebody who fit this mold in Gretchen Whitmer, is to nominate progressive people who have liberal positions on the issue, but also people who have a history of accomplishment in public office and have shown the ability to actually go into office and make some of these things happen. I think some of the candidates who've like had more exciting rhetoric about what they're going to do and stuff don't necessarily have the experience and public office, even if they did win, to know how to go about getting some of this stuff into place. So I think what we're really seeing Democrats do in a lot of cases is it's not that they're necessarily picking somebody who's more towards the center, but they're picking sort of more experienced, more qualified candidates who are still quite liberal, who might have more of an ability to sort of make those beliefs translate into policy actions.
And to wrap up in just a second, we're speaking with Tom Jensen of Public Policy Polling. Other thoughts or final observations about the Tuesday races?
I think the one other thing that was interesting on Tuesday night was that in the Kansas Republican primary for governor, Donald Trump endorsed the Secretary of State, Kris Kobach, the day before the election, and he actually went in the wrong direction from where the polls had been. He'd been up by 7 or 8 points in the polls, and his race ended up as a tie. So I think it showed that Donald Trump's control over the Republican Party and his endorsements is really sort of a case-by-case thing on how powerful he is. There have been some races where Trump endorsed a Republican, and that let them go on to sort of completely having a blowout win in the primary. But there have also been a couple of cases now where it hasn't been that clear that that Trump really carries that much sway over his entire party. So I think it just adds some nuance to that question about whether Trump really has total control over the GOP or not.
PublicPolicyPolling.com, the website for more information. Find them on Twitter at PPP Polls. Tom Jensen, thank you so much.
Thanks, Aaron. Take care.